Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. June Examination Series 2016. English as a Second Language. Extended Tier. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number, and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers. And when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the exam. Questions 1 to 4. You will hear 4 short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than 3 words or a number for each detail. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. Which day do the friends agree to go to the cinema? B. Why did the friends decide to see the earlier film?
Hello.
Hi, Ricardo. It's Paola here.
Hi. What's up, Paola?
Well, I was just wondering if you fancy coming to the cinema tonight.
I'd love to, but my uncle's coming for dinner, so I'd better stay in. How about tomorrow night?
My math test is on Wednesday, but Thursday's good for me.
Perfect. Shall we go and see a 7 o'clock film? Then we'll have enough time to get something to eat before it starts.
How about going at 5, because it's cheaper?
That sounds like a good plan.
Great. See you then.
Hello.
Hi, Ricardo. It's Paola here.
Hi. What's up, Paola?
Well, I was just wondering if you fancy coming to the cinema tonight.
I'd love to, but my uncle's coming for dinner, so I'd better stay in. How about tomorrow night?
My math test is on Wednesday, but Thursday's good for me.
Perfect. Shall we go and see a 7 o'clock film? Then we'll have enough time to get something to eat before it starts.
How about going at 5, because it's cheaper?
That sounds like a good plan.
Great. See you then.
Question 2. A. How much is a ticket to visit Warwick Castle? B. What do the students have to wear for their trip?
Listen, everybody. As you all know, we're going on a trip to Warwick Castle tomorrow, as this proved very popular last year. Those of you who went there last time, please remember the admission fee has gone up by £3.50, so you'll need to bring £16.30 to get in. The other important thing to bear in mind is the weather. We are expecting a cold day with showers, so jackets are a must. I don't want to see anybody in shorts or T-shirts, let alone flip-flops. We'll be doing lots of walking while we're there. Listen, everybody. As you all know, we're going on a trip to Warwick Castle tomorrow, as this proved very popular last year. Those of you who went there last time, please remember the admission fee has gone up by £3.50, so you'll need to bring £16.30 to get in. The other important thing to bear in mind is the weather. We are expecting a cold day with showers, so jackets are a must. I don't want to see anybody in shorts or t-shirts, let alone flip-flops. We'll be doing lots of walking while we're there.
Question 3. A. What product is the customer complaining about? B. What does the customer decide to do?
Hello, sir. Can I help you?
Well, I bought some accessories for my smartphone in here last week. The cover's okay, but can I ask you about the headphones? I've got them here.
Let's have a look.
The thing is, when I put them in, they really hurt my ears, so there must be something wrong with the design.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir, but we haven't had a problem with them before. Would you like to try some different ones instead?
I thought I'd exchange them, but I don't really need them, so I'll just have a refund if that's okay.
Sure, that's fine. Hello, sir. Can I help you?
Well, I bought some accessories for my smartphone in here last week. The cover's okay, but can I ask you about the headphones? I've got them here.
Let's have a look.
The thing is, when I put them in, they really hurt my ears, so there must be something wrong with the design.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir, but we haven't had a problem with them before. Would you like to try some different ones instead?
I thought I'd exchange them, but I don't really need them, so I'll just have a refund if that's okay.
Sure, that's fine.
Question 4. A. What information will be on the radio next? B. What is the presenter most excited about discussing with Michelle Q?
Good morning, everybody. It's 6 o'clock, Monday, April the 18th, and you're listening to Radio Gollum. As usual, we're going to give you today's weather, but not before you hear the traffic update. Then at 7 o'clock, we'll be talking to Lizzie Clark about her latest book, and we've got plenty of music for you in between. At lunchtime, pop queen Michelle Q will be in the studio. I'll be asking her what inspired her new album, and I really can't wait to find out about her next tour, which we've all been waiting for. But now it's over to... Good morning, everybody. It's 6 o'clock, Monday, April the 18th, and you're listening to Radio Gollum. As usual, we're going to give you today's weather, but not before you hear the traffic update. Then at 7 o'clock, we'll be talking to Lizzie Clark about her latest book, and we've got plenty of music for you in between. At lunchtime, pop queen Michelle Q will be in the studio. I'll be asking her what inspired her new album, and I really can't wait to find out about her next tour, which we've all been waiting for. But now it's over to...
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment, you will hear question 5. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 5. You will hear a talk given by an explorer called Yoshi Yamana about his expedition to the South Pole. Listen to the talk and complete the sentences below. Write 1 or 2 words or a number in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Good morning to all our listeners. Today we'll be talking to Yoshi Yamana about his latest polar expedition. Hello, Yoshi. Tell us about the expedition.
Well, I've always been inspired by great explorers like Captain Scott, and that's why I decided to go on this expedition. It's certainly not the first unsupported expedition made on foot, but it's definitely the longest. I was accompanied by my best friend, Akira, who's a very experienced mountaineer and the best cameraman I know. We've been friends since high school and later went to university together. As teenagers, we always dreamt of going on a wild adventure, so this was a dream come true. The preparations for the expedition took us a long time. We actually set out in October 2013, although we began getting ready for it in July 2003, one day after my birthday. I was able to use the experience I gained on other trips that I had made. Akira and I chose an island in the Arctic Sea to test our endurance in low temperatures, as the climate there was very similar to the South Pole. We were also frequent visitors to the gym and did a lot of weightlifting to build up our physical strength. The other thing we had to do was to think very carefully about what to take with us, because we didn't want to have too much weight to pull. For example, we had to shorten the handles on our toothbrushes and cut off the labels on our shirts and trousers and replace the metal fasteners on our sleeping bags with plastic ones. Throughout our journey, we used the latest technology so that people could follow our progress in real time. We took two ultrabooks, really light laptops, with us. Of course, we couldn't use them in the open air, but we could in our tents. Before our expedition, the ultrabooks had to be thoroughly tested in cold chambers in temperatures as low as minus 50 to see if they functioned correctly. You may be surprised to hear that these ultrabooks are completely standard, apart from the batteries and cables, which both had to be modified. Now let me tell you about a typical expedition day in Antarctica. We travelled for approximately 9 hours each day. However, we had frequent 10-minute breaks so that the day didn't seem so monotonous, and to ensure that we had time to eat. In this cold climate, it's important to consume enough calories. Compared to the 2,000 calories we'd need to eat under normal circumstances, we had to get through almost 6,000 a day to keep up our energy levels. To achieve that, we had energy drinks and protein bars. Then, each evening, we worked on our blogs and uploaded all the photos we'd taken that day before going to sleep. This expedition has definitely been the biggest challenge in my life so far, but I really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Good morning to all our listeners. Today we'll be talking to Yoshi Yamana about his latest polar expedition. Hello, Yoshi. Tell us about the expedition.
Well, I've always been inspired by great explorers like Captain Scott, and that's why I decided to go on this expedition. It's certainly not the first unsupported expedition made on foot, but it's definitely the longest. I was accompanied by my best friend, Akira, who's a very experienced mountaineer and the best cameraman I know. We've been friends since high school and later went to university together. As teenagers, we always dreamt of going on a wild adventure, so this was a dream come true. The preparations for the expedition took us a long time. We actually set out in October 2013, although we began getting ready for it in July 2003, one day after my birthday. I was able to use the experience I gained on other trips that I had made. Akira and I chose an island in the Arctic Sea to test our endurance in low temperatures, as the climate there was very similar to the South Pole. We were also frequent visitors to the gym and did a lot of weightlifting to build up our physical strength. The other thing we had to do was to think very carefully about what to take with us, because we didn't want to have too much weight to pull. For example, we had to shorten the handles on our toothbrushes and cut off the labels on our shirts and trousers and replace the metal fasteners on our sleeping bags with plastic ones. Throughout our journey, we used the latest technology so that people could follow our progress in real time. We took two ultrabooks, really light laptops, with us. Of course, we couldn't use them in the open air, but we could in our tents. Before our expedition, the ultrabooks had to be thoroughly tested in cold chambers in temperatures as low as minus 50 to see if they functioned correctly. You may be surprised to hear that these ultrabooks are completely standard, apart from the batteries and cables, which both had to be modified. Now let me tell you about a typical expedition day in Antarctica. We travelled for approximately 9 hours each day. However, we had frequent 10-minute breaks so that the day didn't seem so monotonous, and to ensure that we had time to eat. In this cold climate, it's important to consume enough calories. Compared to the 2,000 calories we'd need to eat under normal circumstances, we had to get through almost 6,000 a day to keep up our energy levels. To achieve that, we had energy drinks and protein bars. Then, each evening, we worked on our blogs and uploaded all the photos we'd taken that day before going to sleep. This expedition has definitely been the biggest challenge in my life so far, but I really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
That is the end of the talk. In a moment, you will hear question 6. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 6. You will hear 6 people talking about holidays. For each of speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list A to G which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the appropriate box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. You will hear the recording twice. Speaker 1.
I'm in my third year at university, doing a law degree. I do a lot of reading and research and work really hard. That's the reason why I find very little time to see my friends during the academic year. When the summer holiday comes, I don't like travelling alone, so I always invite my friends to come with me. We select a capital we fancy. Each year it's somewhere different. We normally visit a lot of museums and galleries. And then, when we're tired, we just sit in a cafe and watch the world go by.
Speaker 2.
I'm doing business studies at a college in Shanghai. The students come from all over the world, so I get to learn about other cultures from my friends without having to visit their countries. This doesn't mean I don't like to travel, though. Quite the opposite. People often think that I just go and see my friends. It's tempting, and to be honest, I've done it a couple of times. But being on my own is more enjoyable for me. I can just make spontaneous decisions and do things at my own pace.
Speaker 3.
As a student, I don't have much money for holidays, but when I get the chance to go away, I love experiencing other cultures, especially because when I was little, our family used to spend all our holidays in this country. We went hill walking every day, which was fun at the time. Now I have a wide circle of friends, so there's always somebody who joins me on my trips around the world. I'd hate doing it all on my own.
Speaker 4.
About 3 years ago, my family and I moved back to Egypt, where I come from originally. Before that, we lived in Dubai. While we were living there, I often asked my mom about life back in Egypt. So you can imagine how excited I was when I found out we were moving back. Now, whenever I have a few spare days, I spend as much time going to see my extended family as I can. It's just a shame I don't see my friends from Dubai anymore.
Speaker 5.
I used to love spending holidays at friends' houses. We didn't do much, just relaxing and chatting. These days, I much prefer to make the most of my time by doing something that I've never tried before. Last year, for example, I did a cookery course, and the year before that, I did beekeeping. What is great is that you don't have to travel abroad for this kind of thing. You'd be surprised how much there is on offer locally.
Speaker 6.
I have a very hectic working life. I travel to a lot of cities in many countries all around the world on business. It's very interesting, and I always wish I could do more sightseeing when I'm there. However, when it comes to my own time off, I love doing something completely different. I prefer going to different places every year and doing all sorts of things like hiking or mountain biking. I certainly couldn't sit on a beach all day long.
Now you will hear the six speakers again. Speaker 1.
I'm in my third year at university, doing a law degree. I do a lot of reading and research and work really hard. That's the reason why I find very little time to see my friends during the academic year. When the summer holiday comes, I don't like travelling alone, so I always invite my friends to come with me. We select a capital we fancy. Each year it's somewhere different. We normally visit a lot of museums and galleries. And then, when we're tired, we just sit in a cafe and watch the world go by.
Speaker 2.
I'm doing business studies at a college in Shanghai. The students come from all over the world, so I get to learn about other cultures from my friends without having to visit their countries. This doesn't mean I don't like to travel, though. Quite the opposite. People often think that I just go and see my friends. It's tempting, and to be honest, I've done it a couple of times. But being on my own is more enjoyable for me. I can just make spontaneous decisions and do things at my own pace.
Speaker 3.
As a student, I don't have much money for holidays, but when I get the chance to go away, I love experiencing other cultures, especially because when I was little, our family used to spend all our holidays in this country. We went hill walking every day, which was fun at the time. Now I have a wide circle of friends, so there's always somebody who joins me on my trips around the world. I'd hate doing it all on my own.
Speaker 4.
About 3 years ago, my family and I moved back to Egypt, where I come from originally. Before that, we lived in Dubai. While we were living there, I often asked my mom about life back in Egypt. So you can imagine how excited I was when I found out we were moving back. Now, whenever I have a few spare days, I spend as much time going to see my extended family as I can. It's just a shame I don't see my friends from Dubai anymore.
Speaker 5.
I used to love spending holidays at friends' houses. We didn't do much, just relaxing and chatting. These days, I much prefer to make the most of my time by doing something that I've never tried before. Last year, for example, I did a cookery course, and the year before that, I did beekeeping. What is great is that you don't have to travel abroad for this kind of thing. You'd be surprised how much there is on offer locally.
Speaker 6.
I have a very hectic working life. I travel to a lot of cities in many countries all around the world on business. It's very interesting, and I always wish I could do more sightseeing when I'm there. However, when it comes to my own time off, I love doing something completely different. I prefer going to different places every year and doing all sorts of things like hiking or mountain biking. I certainly couldn't sit on a beach all day long.
That is the end of question 6. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. You will hear a radio presenter asking a student called Abhijit about a competition called the Spelling Bee. Listen to their conversation and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
Abhijit, thank you for agreeing to come and answer some questions about the competition you're taking part in. Let's start with the competition itself. What is it about?
Well, it's a contest in which people compete to see who can spell the most words correctly.
And why that name, Spelling Bee? I always wondered why bee was chosen.
I wondered myself and asked my friends if they knew. They thought it was because bees are clever insects. Some people suggested that bees are very busy, and you are indeed when preparing for the contest. Then I read somewhere that a long time ago, the word bee was used for a kind of gathering when people would get together and do things as a group.
I wasn't aware of that meaning. Is the competition a fairly recent event?
Not at all. It's been around for a while. I heard that it was first held in 1870, but that turned out to be incorrect. The first ever competition, as we know it today, took place in 1925, even though something similar was documented before that in 1857.
Does the competition take place in English-speaking countries?
Well, only one state competed in the first contest, Kentucky in the USA. Then it gradually grew in popularity and contestants from other states of America participated. These days, the idea of the spelling bee has spread to other countries worldwide, and similar competitions are held in Bangladesh, England, Kuwait, and Morocco, just to name a few.
Now, what about the competitors? Do you have any interesting facts about them?
A lot of people have competed. However, it's worth mentioning that in 1996, the first ever deaf person took part and finished in 48th place out of 247. This is a real achievement. He was allowed an interpreter who would sign the words to him using hand gestures. In addition to that, he had a special radio device which allowed him to hear the announced words slightly. He didn't win because some abstract words can't be translated into sign language. But the main thing is that he showed a lot of courage and determination to achieve his goals.
That's a good story to share. But what happens on the day of the competition?
First, the word is announced, and the contestant has to say the word to show he or she has understood it. Then they spell it, and finally say the word again to show that they have finished spelling it. It is not against the rules to ask the announcer to repeat the word. Once the contestants start spelling a word, they can pause to think about the remaining letters. They are also allowed to repeat their spelling. However, they must not change the order of the letters they have spelt so far. If they do, they are immediately disqualified.
I'm sure it takes a lot of effort to prepare for the competition.
Some contestants go through dictionaries and have long lists of words that they memorise. Personally, I try to make a lot of handwritten notes. This helps my spelling. But what I find particularly helpful is reading a variety of materials on different subjects. I then highlight unusual words. This really seems to help.
Right. And do you think spelling bees have got a future?
In this day and age, you might think, who needs to spell correctly since we have spell checkers? Nevertheless, the number of competitions has nearly doubled in the last few decades, and I think they'll always be popular. This is contrary to the common belief that people would lose interest in spelling bees and forget how to spell.
Finally, what would you like to say to our listeners who may be thinking of entering?
It doesn't really matter if you enter with your friend or on your own. In my view, the most important thing is to have confidence. It's important to enjoy it too. If you spend long hours memorising words and asking your friends to drill the words with you, you won't have any fun and will start wondering why you entered in the first place.
Thank you very much, Abhijit, and good luck in this year's competition.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Abhijit, thank you for agreeing to come and answer some questions about the competition you're taking part in. Let's start with the competition itself. What is it about?
Well, it's a contest in which people compete to see who can spell the most words correctly.
And why that name, Spelling Bee? I always wondered why bee was chosen.
I wondered myself and asked my friends if they knew. They thought it was because bees are clever insects. Some people suggested that bees are very busy, and you are indeed when preparing for the contest. Then I read somewhere that a long time ago, the word bee was used for a kind of gathering when people would get together and do things as a group.
I wasn't aware of that meaning. Is the competition a fairly recent event?
Not at all. It's been around for a while. I heard that it was first held in 1870, but that turned out to be incorrect. The first ever competition, as we know it today, took place in 1925, even though something similar was documented before that in 1857.
Does the competition take place in English-speaking countries?
Well, only one state competed in the first contest, Kentucky in the USA. Then it gradually grew in popularity and contestants from other states of America participated. These days, the idea of the spelling bee has spread to other countries worldwide, and similar competitions are held in Bangladesh, England, Kuwait, and Morocco, just to name a few.
Now, what about the competitors? Do you have any interesting facts about them?
A lot of people have competed. However, it's worth mentioning that in 1996, the first ever deaf person took part and finished in 48th place out of 247. This is a real achievement. He was allowed an interpreter who would sign the words to him using hand gestures. In addition to that, he had a special radio device which allowed him to hear the announced words slightly. He didn't win because some abstract words can't be translated into sign language. But the main thing is that he showed a lot of courage and determination to achieve his goals.
That's a good story to share. But what happens on the day of the competition?
First, the word is announced, and the contestant has to say the word to show he or she has understood it. Then they spell it, and finally say the word again to show that they have finished spelling it. It is not against the rules to ask the announcer to repeat the word. Once the contestants start spelling a word, they can pause to think about the remaining letters. They are also allowed to repeat their spelling. However, they must not change the order of the letters they have spelt so far. If they do, they are immediately disqualified.
I'm sure it takes a lot of effort to prepare for the competition.
Some contestants go through dictionaries and have long lists of words that they memorise. Personally, I try to make a lot of handwritten notes. This helps my spelling. But what I find particularly helpful is reading a variety of materials on different subjects. I then highlight unusual words. This really seems to help.
Right. And do you think spelling bees have got a future?
In this day and age, you might think, who needs to spell correctly since we have spell checkers? Nevertheless, the number of competitions has nearly doubled in the last few decades, and I think they'll always be popular. This is contrary to the common belief that people would lose interest in spelling bees and forget how to spell.
Finally, what would you like to say to our listeners who may be thinking of entering?
It doesn't really matter if you enter with your friend or on your own. In my view, the most important thing is to have confidence. It's important to enjoy it too. If you spend long hours memorising words and asking your friends to drill the words with you, you won't have any fun and will start wondering why you entered in the first place.
Thank you very much, Abhijit, and good luck in this year's competition.
That is the end of question 7. In a moment you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8, Part A. You will hear a zoologist giving a talk about an animal study. Listen to the talk and complete the sentences in Part A. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Andy Brodie is a leading zoologist, currently working on a study of animals' nocturnal behaviour, and he's here today to share some facts with us.
Hello, everybody. Let me start by introducing the study at Bristol Zoo. We initially intended to focus on the behaviour of dolphins and seals, but narrowed it down to the latter only. This zoo was perfect for our study, as it contains a location called the Sea Coast. This popular attraction consists of two pools. Thanks to these, we could watch the animals both from below and above the water. To simulate the animals' natural habitat, the zoo has always ensured that the enclosure was equipped with pebble beaches and rocks, and they've recently acquired a wave machine. For the purposes of my research, waterfalls were constructed. The animals seemed to really enjoy them. My team focused on the animals' nocturnal behaviour and their sleeping habits. We were allowed into their enclosure using night vision cameras, but had to be very careful not to disturb them or trip over, as any sound could alert the animals and make them very agitated. At night, the dominant male, the leader of the group, would produce a low, continuous noise, which reminded me of a car engine. This was very different to the sound made by the rest of the group, which resembles a dog barking. The leader used this noise to keep the rest of the group in order. He had a really fascinating personality and quickly became the team's favourite, earning himself the name The General. He was really bossy and reminded us of a cartoon character called Mr. T. It was very interesting to observe one incident when another male forced the leader from his favourite spot. The two males competing for the position made the rest of the group very distressed. This prevented the animals from sleeping, which resulted in sleep deprivation. These animals are known to go through two types of sleep. While they're in the water, they only use one half of their brain to sleep. Apart from aquatic animals, this type of sleep has also been observed in birds that migrate. However, when on land, just like other terrestrial animals, they experienced sleeping patterns using both sides of their brain. Our group used the latter to overcome their sleep deprivation, which proved that this type of sleep must play a critical role in their well-being. Now, before I move on to the next part of our talk today, does anyone have any questions?
Now you will hear the talk again.
Andy Brodie is a leading zoologist, currently working on a study of animals' nocturnal behaviour, and he's here today to share some facts with us.
Hello, everybody. Let me start by introducing the study at Bristol Zoo. We initially intended to focus on the behaviour of dolphins and seals, but narrowed it down to the latter only. This zoo was perfect for our study, as it contains a location called the Sea Coast. This popular attraction consists of two pools. Thanks to these, we could watch the animals both from below and above the water. To simulate the animals' natural habitat, the zoo has always ensured that the enclosure was equipped with pebble beaches and rocks, and they've recently acquired a wave machine. For the purposes of my research, waterfalls were constructed. The animals seem to really enjoy them. My team focused on the animals' nocturnal behaviour and their sleeping habits. We were allowed into their enclosure using night vision cameras, but had to be very careful not to disturb them or trip over, as any sound could alert the animals and make them very agitated. At night, the dominant male, the leader of the group, would produce a low, continuous noise, which reminded me of a car engine. This was very different to the sound made by the rest of the group, which resembles a dog barking. The leader used this noise to keep the rest of the group in order. He had a really fascinating personality and quickly became the team's favourite, earning himself the name The General. He was really bossy and reminded us of a cartoon character called Mr. T. It was very interesting to observe one incident when another male forced the leader from his favourite spot. The two males competing for the position made the rest of the group very distressed. This prevented the animals from sleeping, which resulted in sleep deprivation. These animals are known to go through two types of sleep. While they're in the water, they only use one half of their brain to sleep. Apart from aquatic animals, this type of sleep has also been observed in birds that migrate. However, when on land, just like other terrestrial animals, they experienced sleeping patterns using both sides of their brain. Our group used the latter to overcome their sleep deprivation, which proved that this type of sleep must play a critical role in their well-being. Now, before I move on to the next part of our talk today, does anyone have any questions?
Question 8, Part B. Now listen to a conversation between two students about other studies into animals' sleeping habits and complete the sentences in Part B. Write one or two words only, or a number, in each gap. You will hear the conversation twice.
Hi, Olga.
Hi, Max.
Great to see you, Olga. I wanted to chat with you.
What about?
You know the talk you went to last week? Well, they showed a similar programme on TV the other day.
Really? Pity I missed that. The talk was really fascinating and I decided to research the topic a bit more. I would have loved to have seen it. Who presented it?
A zoologist called Natalie Ling. She called the programme The Zoo Sleepover and she admitted it was quite a challenge for her as she'd get quite grumpy during the filming. Basically, she couldn't get her usual 8-hour sleep. The crew only got 5 hours on average.
Huh, I bet they were exhausted by the end. I need at least 7 hours myself, otherwise I'm shattered. But tell me more, did they focus only on certain animals, like the zoologist did in his talk?
The programme covered quite a large number, actually. They installed night vision cameras in 15 enclosures. And who do you think slept the most?
I have no idea. Could it have been the tigers? I don't think they're very active at night, are they?
You're close. Lions outdid them, though. Penguins and giraffes, on the other hand, slept the shortest time.
That is surprising. I guess the amount of time animals sleep and where or how they sleep depends on the environment they live in and what they have to do to survive.
Exactly. They showed how sleeping patterns of animals vary. Giraffes, for example, sleep standing up in the wild simply because it's too dangerous for them to lie down. Whereas giraffes in zoos lie down to have a nap.
Isn't it a bit tricky for them with such long necks?
Well, it would affect their blood circulation if they stayed in this position very long.
What else did you find out?
Let me see. Oh, yeah, The red panda, which is normally a nocturnal animal and sleeps mostly during the day, actually started snoozing during the night in captivity. But I read somewhere else that temperature plays a vital role in how active they become.
Oh, right.
And another thing that stuck in my mind was gorillas' sleeping habits.
Huh, funny you should mention that. I've just read about it on the internet. Apparently, the females tend to sleep in trees with their young, while males prefer to make a nest down in the grass.
I guess it all depends on where they feel safe. Anyway...
Now you will hear the conversation again.
Hi, Olga.
Hi, Max.
Great to see you, Olga. I wanted to chat with you.
What about?
You know the talk you went to last week? Well, they showed a similar programme on TV the other day.
Really? Pity I missed that. The talk was really fascinating and I decided to research the topic a bit more. I would have loved to have seen it. Who presented it?
A zoologist called Natalie Ling. She called the programme the Zoo Sleepover, and she admitted it was quite a challenge for her, as she'd get quite grumpy during the filming. Basically, she couldn't get her usual 8-hour sleep. The crew only got 5 hours on average.
Huh, I bet they were exhausted by the end. I need at least 7 hours myself, otherwise I'm shattered. But tell me more, did they focus only on certain animals, like the zoologist did in his talk?
The programme covered quite a large number, actually. They installed night vision cameras in 15 enclosures. And who do you think slept the most?
I have no idea. Could it have been the tigers? I don't think they're very active at night, are they?
You're close. Lions outdid them, though. Penguins and giraffes, on the other hand, slept the shortest time.
That is surprising. I guess the amount of time animals sleep and where or how they sleep depends on the environment they live in and what they have to do to survive.
Exactly. They showed how sleeping patterns of animals vary. Giraffes, for example, sleep standing up in the wild simply because it's too dangerous for them to lie down, whereas giraffes in zoos lie down to have a nap.
Isn't it a bit tricky for them with such long necks?
Well, it would affect their blood circulation if they stayed in this position very long.
What else did you find out?
Let me see. Oh, yeah, the red panda, which is normally a nocturnal animal and sleeps mostly during the day, actually started snoozing during the night in captivity. But I read somewhere else that temperature plays a vital role in how active they become.
Oh, right.
And another thing that stuck in my mind was gorillas' sleeping habits.
Huh, funny you should mention that. I've just read about it on the internet. Apparently, the females tend to sleep in trees with their young, while males prefer to make a nest down in the grass.
I guess it all depends on where they feel safe. Anyway...
That is the end of question 8 and of the test. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers.